Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
We just got a report here on this end that the students are in. Turn the cheek down that way, Don. Down there. You can see from here some of the action occurring down there.
An extreme situation has been created in Little Rock. This challenge must be met. And with such measures as will preserve to the people as a whole their lawfully protected rights.
The words of President Dwight David Eisenhower, who called in 1,200 troops from the 101st Airborne Division for an unlikely task, escorting and protecting nine teenagers who dared to enter previously segregated Little Rock Central High School. I'm Glenn Moberg. It was on September 23, 1957, that those students had to be rushed away, huddled in the backs of police cars that spread through an angry white mob of more than 1,000 white protesters. The mob converged on a group of black journalists, hitting one on the back of the head with a brick. He would develop Parkinson's and die, apparently, from his injuries 3 years later. The order to desegregate came after the groundbreaking Brown v. Board of Education ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, an order that Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus refused to implement, first by trying to block the school entrance with National Guard troops, and then by closing all of the city's high schools for a full year. In the midst of this maelstrom was an unlikely heroine, a 14-year-old girl who was spat upon, assaulted, and isolated by her fellow students. Carlotta Walls Lanier was in Wisconsin this week, speaking to thousands of students in appearances at Edgar High School, Wausau East High School, and UW-Marathon County. Her visit was made possible by the acclaimed Walk in Their Shoes lecture series and sponsored in part by Wisconsin Public Radio. Today on Route 51, you'll hear reaction from those students, analysis by political scientist Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and Wausau Daily Herald education reporter Keith Ulig. But first, here's my extended interview with Carlotta Walls Lanier of the Little Rock Nine. We began by asking her what it was like to grow up in the Jim Crow South.
I know you have seen some pictures of colored fountains and white fountains where you drank water that was divided. You had to sit at the back of the bus. The African Americans sat in the back of the bus. Whites sat up front.
What did it mean for you personally growing up? What were some of the things that you couldn't do that white kids could
do? I couldn't go to the public swimming pool, for one. My great-grandfather owned property about three blocks away from the Little Rock City Park and Zoo. We could only go to the zoo on certain days to, you know, enjoy experiencing, seeing the various animals and so forth. I enjoyed going to the baseball field. We could only go when the black teams came through.
The
Negro Leagues. And I saw the Indianapolis Clowns. I saw the Birmingham Barons, Kansas City Monarchs, the New York Giants, and whites went to see them as well, but we had to sit in a certain section. So you knew that this was where you were to sit. It was the same way in the theater. I buy my ticket at the same place that the whites are buying, but I've got to go around the side of the building and go up these rickety steps to go to the balcony of the theater.
In the midst of all of this, why did you want to go to Central High School?
Well, I knew from what my parents told me that things were going to change, and I saw change take place in my first 14 years of my life. It was validated with Brown versus Board of Education through that Supreme Court decision. So change was slow, but it was happening. And I was a little bit more fortunate than some others. I had the opportunity to go and visit relatives in St. Louis and Chicago and New York, and I did that. My parents were able to expose me to that, and I saw the differences.
You saw a different way.
I saw a different way, and I knew that that would hopefully come to Little Rock, Arkansas. So, and I needed to be prepared, and being prepared was getting the best education available.
When the group of you that were going into Central Before you could register, you had to meet with the superintendent. What did the superintendent tell you you couldn't do?
We could not participate in any extracurricular activities. That included the band, the choir, any of the sports teams. We could not participate in student council. We could not work on the yearbook or the newspaper. All of those things were not available to us. It was a pretty much society of no, I guess.
You couldn't even attend football games?
No, could not go to the games or basketball games either.
And what did he tell the young men, the boys who were with
not
you?
Not to look at the white girls. You cannot date them. You do not, you know, touch them, what have you. So I really did feel sad for the boys that were a part of the group. And I think that was part of the problem with the parents. They didn't want their kids sitting next to a black student. And as I have told many people over the years, you know, I have no problems with white people, but I do not get a buzz by sitting next to you. So, you know, that's just how I felt about it. So, and I'm not the only one that feels that way.
What do you remember of the crowd that was outside the school on that September 23rd day?
I saw that crowd as a bunch of thugs and ignorant people. That's how I categorize that group of people.
What were they doing? What were they saying?
Oh, they were calling us names. They were angry. You know, they were calling us the N-word and everything else. But I had heard that before, and it just rolled off my back like water off a duck's back, because I was not about to address it and validate it. So I ignored it.
Did you think things would be better once you got inside the school and you'd be able to mingle with the other students?
Yeah, I really did think that once they recognized that we weren't there to hurt them, that we would, you know, I do feel that if the adults had not been involved, that they would have felt a little bit easier about welcoming us. I think that at one time they probably did have a welcoming committee, and then that was probably, you know.
How were you treated by the other students?
I was either ignored, or I was harassed, or there was a large group that I think would have been friends if they had the opportunity to be themselves.
You write in your book about going down the hallway and how loud it was. And,
yes.
And you're surrounded by people, and you're being pushed and jostled, and your mm-hmm. books are being thrown onto the ground,
right.
And you're being spat at.
Right.
All of these people around, and you must have felt so lonely.
Well, yes. I was alone, other than the guard that I had, who was just doing his job. But I also had defensive mechanisms that I thought that would help get me from one place to the other.
You were 14 years old.
I know. And I was 14 and really didn't realize how dangerous it was to begin with, because I guess I was pretty naive about that. I wish that they looked at me as another human being as I looked at them, but they didn't, okay, at least that group that was harassing us.
Were you ever afraid?
Yeah, I was afraid, especially on September 23rd. That was probably my worst day.
That was the day they had to rush you out of the school in
right.
police cars.
Yeah. So, and not knowing why. See, that was my problem. When I can see what's going on and know what's going on, that probably would have helped me. But I did not know why we were being rushed out. And I didn't know whether it was a bomb threat or people had gotten in and had guns. I didn't know what the reason was until I got home.
Looking back on President Eisenhower's decision to send in the 101st Airborne, mm-hmm. what do you think of the leadership he showed in doing that, and why do you think he did it?
Let me just put it this way. Melba Beals feels that he was her hero because he did send in the 101st Airborne. I felt, what took you so long? But I was appreciative that he had done that. But here was 3 weeks. I felt like I could compete with anyone given the same opportunities, and they are in school and I'm not. So here you got a governor that's defying you and the Constitution and the law. You as the president, I felt, should put that man in place. That's 14 years of age.
At Edgar High School today, you said maybe the Cold War had something to do with it.
Oh, it did. Russia had gotten into outer space before we had. So we weren't number one, and it was the biggest story of the year. On top of that, there are pictures being shown throughout the world of military people stopping us from going into school. Communism was really big during those days, and we feared that. Russia is saying to us, you know, you are telling me that this is the way to live in a democratic society when you've got guns pointed at kids?
Pointed at kids trying to go to school.
Right.
And then later, Governor Faubus chose to close all the high schools in Little Rock in
Correct.
Order to keep just one of them from being integrated. It is so hard to believe that a major southern city like Little Rock could go an entire year without any public high schools.
I agree. I just think it's just one stupid, ignorant move that this governor made. And, 3,800 kids not going to school and not being educated.
Did you have a chance to ever talk to Governor Faubus later in life after all
well,
this?
Well, we were in the same space. Let's put it that way. I did not want to talk to him. I felt that he had made it pretty bad for not only us, but for other citizens of Little Rock. We were at a same event for Dwight D. Eisenhower's 100th birthday in Abilene, Kansas. And there was a reception the evening before and then a panel discussion the next day. And it was the panel discussion that he made the comment that he would...
You were sitting on that panel with him?
I was along with the other four or five of us of the nine. And he gave his point of view, and his was, in the end, I would do it this way again. And I was just taken aback by that. So when it was my turn to speak, I let him know I would do the very same thing again, too. In other words, I would still sign up and go to Little Rock Central High School because I knew I had that right.
And then just several weeks before you were scheduled to graduate,
mm-hmm.
a bomb goes off outside your house. And instead of blaming the segregationists, who had set off bombs in
right.
front of businesses just
right.
a few weeks earlier,
yeah.
they blamed your next-door neighbor and your father.
Right. And
Two black individuals.
And
And the one was convicted by an all-white jury?
My friend, who was 16 years of age, was, yes, an all-white jury, and he was sentenced to 5 years in prison, which he served about 18 months to 2 years.
Do you see a parallel between that and all-white juries exonerating
yes.
white people who shoot and kill unarmed
blacks.
Men?
I see the very same thing going on. So, yes, I do.
So we've made some progress, but...
Yeah, we've made progress because not all cities are like that, okay? There are areas, there are places... There are more places that show justice better than others.
50 years later, you attended a high school reunion.
Yes.
Did any of the students who tormented you, called you those racist names, did any of them apologize to you?
No, not necessarily apologize. They were more open in welcoming me to the 50th anniversary. But I really didn't get any apologies from anyone.
In Wisconsin, as in other states, there are efforts to institute voter ID laws, mm. which disproportionately affect the poor and
mm-hmm.
people of color. There are efforts to expand school vouchers and use public money for private schools,
mm-hmm.
which, according to some, will hurt the public schools that the poor depend on.
I think that that's number one. These voter IDs are definitely, as I see it, taking you back to the old poll tax, where you had to pay to vote. And my mother sold these poll taxes so to make sure that black people had their voice in voting. These are some of the things with different words or different titles to them is trying to take us back to those times. And I disagree with tax dollars being used for others because those that have no voice are not getting the same opportunities that others are taking to go use right. in another school.
What was your reaction when President Obama was elected? Did you ever think you'd see a black man elected president?
No, I didn't. Not in my lifetime. But I was very happy and very proud of the fact. In fact, I was at the inauguration. I saw him being sworn in. The Little Rock Nine was invited, along with the Tuskegee Airmen and a number of other civil rights involved people.
And how do you feel about the way he's been treated during his presidency?
I don't like how he's being treated, and I know he's being treated that way, number one, because of the color of his skin. Number two, he's probably much smarter than a lot of people that are against him. Maybe he is too professorial. I think he wants to give a lot of credit to people who can think, and he expects them to come to the table and give thoughtful help to make this country a better place, and they're not doing it. So,
do you feel a woman president might have to face some of the same hurdles?
Yes, and to a point. I think that there are a couple of women that one in particular has a lot of moxie, I would say, has been involved in and understands what she would have to go against and would be able to handle it better than others.
You thinking of Hillary Clinton?
Most definitely.
Carlotta, it took you 30 years before you're willing to speak about your experience. Mm-hmm. Why are you speaking about it now?
Because number one, my children. And once you start having children and they're being exposed to certain things and people are saying that you feel that you need to do more educating to your own. But at the same time, their friends need to understand. So then that spreads out even more. And then you really realize that our young people really need to understand why they are sitting in a school with some other kids that don't look like them. They take it for granted, but they don't understand what happened to make that happen. And I feel that I need to help spread that type of word. I had put all these things in the recesses of my mind as to what had happened to me. I had to get past that. And really, speaking to high school students and college students helped me to relive that and kind of bring some of that out and put it to bed.
You spoke at Edgar High School today. Mm-hmm. They bust in students from all over central Wisconsin. Still a predominantly white area. Mm-hmm. Do you think your message is getting across to them?
I hope so. I think if I reached, 25 of them, I consider it a good day.
I think you reached more than that.
Okay.
Carlotta, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Carlotta Walls Lanier of the Little Rock Nine, who in 1957, at the age of 14, faced down angry segregationist mobs at Little Rock Central High School. She was in Wisconsin this week, appearing before thousands of students, thanks to the acclaimed Walk in Their Shoes lecture series. I'm Glenn Moberg. When we come back, we'll hear audio from her appearance at Edgar High School, reaction from the students there, and then analysis by political scientist Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service and Wausau Daily Herald education reporter Keith Uhlig on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Here's Peter Yarrow and former Congressman Dave Obey.
How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer blowing in the wind.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Edward J. Okray Foundation, Bernie's Rock Shop, and St. Mary's University Winona. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woods and Art Museum, where 50 Greatest National Geographic photographs features images and stories from the magazine's 120-year history through February 22nd. LYWAM.org.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday.
That's Bruce Springsteen singing the famous Civil Rights Anthem. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, we look back at a groundbreaking event in American history, the courageous efforts of nine African-American teenagers who braved segregationist mobs to go to school at Little Rock Central High School in Arkansas. Carlotta Walls Lanier was 14 years old at the time, and this week she shared her experiences with thousands of high school students from all across North Central Wisconsin. Thanks to the lecture series, A Walk in Their Shoes, coordinated by Edgar Elementary school teacher Colin Hansen. Here is some sound from Carlotta Wall Lanier's appearance in that community on Monday. Students were bused into Edgar from across central Wisconsin, from as far away as Tomahawk and Wapaka, to hear Carlotta Walls Lanier. And she asked the packed gymnasium to envision 1,200 federal troops patrolling the hallways of their high school.
1,200 troopers. I want you to envision this school with the military up and down your hallway and outside of this school. I want you to envision yourself being escorted from one classroom to the next classroom with a military person escorting you with a gun in his hands. That's how I went to school.
16-year-old Kaylee Kaiser of Edgar High School found the image unsettling.
I think it'd be pretty weird for that to happen, you know, because it'd be strange. I think a little bit scary, just because, you know, there shouldn't be a reason for that in a school. And to have that there would just be a little bit unsettling to me.
How much progress do you think we've made in race relations? And how much do you think still needs to be worked on?
I think we made a lot of progress, but lately I think it's kind of digressing again. And I think we just need to listen to both sides of the story, no matter what it is, and make our own opinions from there.
She asked all of you to think of what it would be like to have 1,200 federal troops, paratroopers, stationed at your school, escorting students back and forth. What do you think of that?
I think it would be very fearful to see such a sight at a school like ours, and I definitely wouldn't like that to happen to my school. So,
the general topic of race relations, how much progress do you think we've made, and how much progress do we still need to make?
I think we've made very tremendous progress. I still think we need a little bit more work yet. Wage differences and people not getting the certain jobs they wanted just because of their race or their gender.
That was 18-year-old Josh Nowak of Edgar High School. Here's 15-year-old Dakota Marlega of Wapaka High.
It was really impactful and powerful, and I thought it made a difference personally for me because it shows me why education is so important and why I need to continue on with it.
What did you think about what she said at the end about the responsibility students have today to not forget what happened because we live in a global society?
I think that was the most important part, and I really feel like that's what we should take away from this.
18-year-old Claire Keene of Tomahawk High School sees parallels between Little Rock and today.
It impressed me most because it wasn't sugar-coated, it wasn't seen through the haze of history. It was real, and it was here.
Do you feel that we've gotten past this kind of racial discrimination and prejudice, or do we still have more work to do?
I think that it's gotten a lot better, but there's definitely more work to do. People are still pointed out as being different, and acceptance isn't always there. It's better in some places than others, but it's definitely something we need to work on.
15-year-old Travis Sullivan of Edgar High School was most impressed with Carlotta Lanier's courage.
She wanted to go to that school, and she had no fears. The fact that it was previously an all-white school, volunteering to go to the school.
She overcame quite a bit, didn't she?
Yeah.
Marilyn Sonnentag, a retired school librarian, was one of a handful of adults in the room. She was 11 years old when she saw the Little Rock crisis on her family's black and white television.
And I remember when this happened, it was on the news, and I, as a child, didn't understand why they were keeping this little girl from going to school and why they had to have police and everybody there to walk her into school. Because as a child, you don't see things as the adults do. You just see it as another child.
That's reaction from just a few of those who attended Carlotta Wall Lanier's appearance at Edgar High School on Monday. Lanier, the youngest member of the Little Rock Nine, who in 1957, at the age of 14, braved angry mobs in an effort to attend that community's Central High School. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. When we come back on Route 51, we'll have analysis from political scientist Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service and Keith Ulig, education reporter from the Wausau Daily Herald. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page and I'll read it on the air. Here are the Neville Brothers.
We don't ride on the back of the bus no more. Sister Rose, she was tired one day after a hard day on her job, when all she wanted was a well-deserved rest, not a scene from an angry mob. A bus driver said, baby, you got to get up, cause a white person wants that seat. But Miss Rose, she said, no, not no more, I'm gonna stay right here and rest my feet. Yeah, thank you, Miss Rose.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Corey Smith Studios, Chippewa Valley Symphony, and Benjamin Farrow DDS. You too can help ensure the future of WPR programs for years to come. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy, Stevens Point, designing and installing renewable energy systems for homes, businesses, and farms. More at the Farm Shed Local Food Fair this Thursday from 6 to 8 at Spash in Stevens Point.
In a little tent, oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Sam Cooke with a song that was played on the radio in the years following the violence at Little Rock High School. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we're discussing the appearance of civil rights icon Carlotta Walls Lanier of the Little Rock Nine at Edgar High School, Wausau East High School, and UW-Marathon County. It was in the fall of 1957 that Carlotta, only 14 years old, was escorted into Little Rock Central by 1,200 federal troops sent in by President Eisenhower. If you joined us just now in the first part of the show, we heard an extended interview with Carlotta Walls Lanier and some sound and reaction from students at her appearance in Edgar, an appearance that was made possible through the Walk in Their Shoes lecture series coordinated by Edgar Elementary School teacher Colin Hansen. Now, Colin couldn't be with us this morning, but we've got two great guests to help us analyze the event and the history behind it. Political scientist Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service and Keith Ulig, the education reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald. If you would like to join the conversation as well, here's the phone number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Keith Ulig, we heard from the students at Edgar High School. You were at Carlotta's appearance at Wausau East, and you shared your experiences in a report that you filed for the Wausau Daily Herald. What were the highlights for you?
I think the reaction of the students were very close to what you got at Edgar. It was a lot more of a diverse student body there. Wausau East High School itself has 24 black students. 10% of the students are Hmong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at sort of the diversity of the student body. I was looking at how teachers were reacting to what Carlotta had to say, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, everybody was riveted. It was a very quiet auditorium while she spoke.
They were listening.
They were listening, yeah.
What parts of her message resonated most?
It's really hard to tell. I think she grabbed people when she spoke personally about the Jim Crow laws. And I know for me it was like you stopped and you think you knew about this conceptually.
Yeah.
But when you hear a person like Carlotta saying, I couldn't go to a zoo on a particular day or swim on a particular day, there's something that reaches in, at least it did for me, reaches into you and go, it's unimaginable to me.
Well, I was impressed by the students at Edgar High School, the event that I went to, and they were predominantly white because they go to de facto segregated schools, not because of the law, but because there are only white people living in a lot of these communities. And her message resonated with those white students, many of whom don't have black students going to school with them. You had a chance to talk to minority students at Wausau East. What was their reaction?
Their reaction was the same. I think they might have related more to her experience. I think one of the things that when she spoke, everybody in that audience was able to relate at least maybe to a small degree to what she went through, you know, through bullying or whatever. And then you think about, oh, wait a minute, how deep was she in on this? So I think they related to it. One of the students I talked to, his father was from Little Rock, and his grandmother told the stories of the Little Rock Nine. He had a look about him that I think, you know, you get when you are excited, when something resonates with you.
Stories that he heard as a child from his family, suddenly it's coming to life.
Yeah.
There's the person
yeah.
who experienced it. I know you wanted to give a shout-out to Colin Hansen, the Edgar Elementary School teacher who spearheaded the Walk in Their Shoes program that has brought so many significant figures in American history to Central Wisconsin.
Well, I know I've known Colin for many years now because I've covered a Walk in Their Shoes for I don't know how many, 10 years maybe. And his theory behind this is that history comes alive when you have a person standing in front of you talking about what they experienced. And I think, this is evidence of it. I think this really has deep meaning to our community in ways that we can't measure, in ways that we cannot even express.
And for an elementary school teacher in a rural community like Edgar to take all of this on by himself and make it happen, it's really quite extraordinary.
He does this. He's an extraordinary person. I'll get an email from him, and it'll be chock full of explanation points. And I'll laugh, and I'll go, Colin, did you drink your coffee? He is full of energy. He's full of moxie in that he's just willing to approach these people and say, will you come to Wausau? And they do. And I think it electrifies people in some ways.
Eric Giordano, from a political perspective, what was the significance of the events in 1957 at Little Rock?
Well, tremendously significant. I mean, this whole issue was played out on the national stage. I mean, it involved the President of the United States, and not just in a small sidebar issue or discussion. I mean, these were major issues about whether the federal government should get involved and do states' rights, trump federal rights, and the sending in of the 101st Airborne. I mean, that was very unique and, frankly, very bold.
And what do you think of her explanation that the Cold War had something to do with that? That was an angle on this event that kind of surprised me. I'd never thought of it that way before.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think there was but if you look at the history of race relations and Dr. King, remember that communism was this underlying factor that many people, including in law enforcement, federal and state, were worried about in terms of the movement and the cross-national relationships that Dr. King and others like Malcolm X were making. And there were a lot of accusations, falsely, that some of these things were inspired by communism. Now, interestingly, one of the Little Rock Nine used it in the opposite way and sort of said, hey, I'm on the side of America, when he was sort of talking about why he was doing what he was doing. They were very savvy in dealing with the press and said, you know, we're here because we want to fight things like communism, which all good Americans want to do, which we, the Little Rock Nine, also believe in.
The role Governor Faubus played in encouraging the mobs, Eric Giordano, first by sending in the National Guard to block the school entrance and then actually closing all the city's high schools for an entire year.
Well, you know, the South really believed that it was their fundamental right to continue the policy of segregation. They did not believe that Plessy versus Ferguson should have been overturned. They believed in the separate but equal doctrine. You know, what's really fascinating is Governor Faubus wasn't the worst. Governor Barnett over in neighboring Mississippi was perhaps even worse than Governor Barnett and wouldn't negotiate.
Carlotta Lanier said her parents voted for Governor Faubus before all of this happened because he had the reputation of being a moderate.
Right, and to some extent he was, relatively speaking, to some of the other leaders of that era. Hard to believe given, you know, the actions that he took.
How difficult must it have been for a Republican president, Dwight David Eisenhower, to have sent in 1,200 paratroopers to patrol a city in a state run by a segregationist Democrat, Governor Orval Faubus?
Well, I understand why Carlotta was saying, I wish he'd done it earlier, because the truth is he could have done it earlier. He could have actually done a lot more than he did, and frankly, most of his policies were directed towards moderates. He really thought that he didn't want to support extremists on either side, and he kind of saw those parents and those children trying to force the issue by sending their kids to school. He saw them as somewhat radical. And so he was forced, his hand was forced to use those federal troops. Glad to say that it happened, but it could have happened differently.
You know, the roles of the political parties have changed so much since then. We've got the segregationist Democrat protecting states' rights and an interventionist Republican president asserting the supremacy of the federal government and supporting a liberal Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, and you have to remember too that, you know, the vote of the Southern Democrats were extremely important, maybe not as much to Eisenhower, but even the next president, Kennedy, was faced with a very similar situation in Mississippi when a young black man was trying to get into Ole Miss, and he was worried about losing those Southern votes. Those Democratic votes. So those politics were extremely important to these decisions.
Yeah, and LBJ, when he signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, said, you know, I've just lost the South.
Right, right.
Keith Ulig, Carlotta really stressed the importance of education in her appearances.
Yes, she
here.
Did.
Talk about that.
I think she talked about education as the tool to success in life. And I don't think she was speaking to any particular race or any particular segment of society. I think she's speaking to every kid in that audience and teachers too. I think, it really underscored what I personally believe too, is that that's the foundation of how a person can get ahead in life.
Now, she said in Edgar, I don't know if she said it in Wausau, at Wausau East, that she was disappointed that education is not valued culturally in some poor black communities, that it wasn't cool to be educated.
She did not say that in at Wausau East, and I think that's a particularly a particular issue that's very difficult to overcome. And I would have loved to hear more about that.
But one that's important to her because
yes,
she valued that education so much that she was willing to put up with all of that. I mean, it's difficult to go to high school anyway, right?
Yes.
Under the best of circumstances, but to go through what she went through, being harassed, assaulted, spat upon by her fellow students.
And think about this. I mean, what I was thinking about is, every place that Carlotta turned as a young girl, she was given the message that she is not a true citizen or she's a second class human being. And she said, no, I'm not. Well, how many people are out there that aren't like Carlotta that accepted this message? Because, you know, this is who I am and I can't move beyond this because of the world I live in. And I wonder sometimes if that historical thread is something we are dealing with today. And one of the reasons that might pervade in like those inner city neighborhoods is if you're growing up in one of those neighborhoods and you don't believe there's any way out, why do you feel the need to do anything you know, create that effort.
There's an achievement gap, too. Tony Evers spoke about that.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed Tony Evers at the beginning of this school year, and he really – that's one of the things that he spoke about and one of the focuses of the DPI.
And we should mention that Tony Evers is a state school superintendent.
And Wisconsin has the largest achievement gap in the country. And he's the quote that I have in front of me is, "We always approach it as an issue of poverty," Evers said, "and poverty is important, but race is a significant issue. A poor white kid is likely to achieve at a higher level than a black kid or a Hispanic kid from a high-income level. We can't be color mute on this issue." And I think he's talking about some of the difficulties, the societal and cultural difficulties that educators face.
And Eric Giordano, Carlotta Walls-Lanier had some critical things to say about policy in the state of Wisconsin, school vouchers in particularly, being expanded under Governor Walker's budget proposal this week. Carlotta says the vouchers take money away from the public schools, which she saw as instrumental in giving her and other poor minority students a chance at education.
Right. There's not only a policy gap, but there's a perception gap. And we see this frequently, especially among minority communities who really see this as an extension of attempts to withhold rights or make it more challenging for people in minority positions to gain the same rights and equal rights. Often the majority white population doesn't see it that way. They often feel that, you know, we've already overcome these barriers. We, you know, we're an equal society now, and we really, you know, so everyone should be treated equally, and we're not discriminating based on race in terms of who we're asking to get an ID. Everyone has to get an ID, and yet the question is, who is it disproportionately affecting? And I think Carlotta's message is a strong one.
Well, she compared voter ID in the state of Wisconsin to the old poll taxes in her home state of Arkansas, saying that voter ID was basically the same as that kind of procedure that was used to keep black people from voting in the segregated South.
Sure. I mean, and even if the intentions are good, even if the intention of voter ID is to get, you know, make sure we don't have fraud in the elections, we also have to understand what the unintended consequences are and the costs of doing these types of things. And I wonder if we've really had that discussion as a society. I don't think we have, frankly.
Did you find it interesting that she said her mother used to go around Little Rock's minority neighborhoods making sure that the city's black people paid that poll tax to ensure that they could vote?
I was extremely impressed with that. In fact, that struck me too, Glenn. And what a remarkable woman. You know, we talk about the Little Rock Nine and the courage they had, but imagine their parents. I mean, imagine what they had to go through to put their kids – I can't even imagine putting my kids in harm's way. But they obviously believed in change, and they wanted to be the agents of change, and all respect to the parents and the children.
Political scientist Eric Giordano, education reporter Keith Ulig, talking about the appearance of Carlotta Walls-Lanier of the Little Rock Nine in central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're down to the last 6 minutes or so of the show. Haven't had any phone calls today. That happens sometimes when we have good shows because people just sit and listen. But if you would like to join in the conversation, well, you got to call right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, and I'll try to squeeze in a phone call or two. Or you can just sit back and listen if that's something that you would prefer to do. Can you imagine, Keith Ulig, what would happen if a superintendent told students today what the superintendent told those black students trying to enter Central High School? They had to leave at 3:30. They couldn't participate in sports, couldn't serve in student government, couldn't work for the school newspaper, couldn't even attend football games, and the young black boys were told point blank not to look at the white girls at the school.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I would imagine that the students today, who I find to be really canny and knowledgeable and very much, I believe that they believe in equality. You know, they're very much into diversity and that sort of thing. I think they would walk out of the schools like they did a couple years ago.
Well, there were 39 students initially who had signed up for Central High School, and there were only 9 left after that meeting with the superintendent. 30 of them decided they wanted nothing to do with it.
Carlotta mentioned that in her at WASA East, and she spoke about she felt that she talked about how her parents always encouraged extracurricular activities and, you know, high achievement in school, and she felt that the trade-off for not going for a year of no extracurricular activities would be worth it because of the education that, that Central High School offered at that time.
And then just several weeks before she was scheduled to graduate, a bomb goes off outside her house. Instead of blaming the segregationists, and the segregationists had just set off a series of bombs outside of black-friendly businesses a few weeks earlier, they framed a next-door neighbor of Carlotta's, according to her, her best friend who was black, and they even tried to blame her father. And according to Carlotta, the Little Rock police and the FBI tried to beat confessions out of the two of them. Eric Giordano, your reaction to that part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, this is just horrific. I mean, and when you played those sounds, and I don't know if the sounds were from the parts when they were actually doing those beatings, but it sure sounded like it. I just had a horrible feeling inside. I mean, you look at the threats of violence that they faced at every moment. You heard her talk about it. You know, could there be a bomb? Could that be an issue? Remember the two reporters who were outside, who were almost like served as decoys unwittingly to get the nine out. And as you put it, one was, you know, struck over the head and affected for life.
Died 3 years later.
I mean, this is just almost unimaginable.
But that best friend of hers, convicted for a bombing that she says he didn't do by an all-white jury, she makes the comparison to all-white juries today that refuse to convict white men who kill unarmed black men.
Again, I think we have a credibility gap in our country. And the problem is, you know, how are we going to overcome that? African Americans in particular feel that the justice system is completely stacked against them. Laws that are passed are, you know, favoring whites who do crimes over blacks who do crimes. Blacks are incarcerated at higher rates. Their prison sentences are longer. I mean, these are facts. Why do we have this gap? You know, what's happening? We need a serious discussion in this country about that gap.
And she was happy that President Obama got elected, didn't think that a black man would ever be elected president during her lifetime. And she blamed some of his troubles on the color of his skin. And then she adds that the first woman president is going to face the same thing.
Right. Well, there's no doubt that Obama made history. In some ways, it's worked against him because I think people had extremely high expectations, put him on a pedestal, partly because of the role he's playing not only as an individual but in the societal context. He's just a man. He's not perfect, you know, but he probably does get his share of blame because we do have a lot of latent racism in this country, let's face it. And I think the next woman president, whether she's Republican or Democrat, would face serious challenges of the same sort.
And she was indeed an unlikely heroine, just a 14-year-old girl who wanted to go to school, and she ends up changing America. How often does that happen, where you have just an ordinary citizen and just through a turn of events, they're instrumental in making a change? The example that comes to my mind is Sam Adams, you know, a bar owner in the American Revolution who ends up getting upset about tax policies.
Sure. I mean, you know, you're going to get me on my soapbox, Glenn, but, you know, I think that our generations today, and I would include my own in that, I don't think we appreciate, I think Keith was talking about this a little bit, you know, what these people went through, nor do we seem to have that same attraction or mentality or feel the need for civil action. And you know, I would like to see younger people get more engaged in society around the issues they do. There are some that do, and we need to applaud that. We need to support that. You know, I think it's remarkable what these young people
Keith
did.
Keith Ulig, you've got 10 seconds for your final thoughts.
Well, she told me and the kids at East, we were ordinary kids who did an extraordinary thing of that time. I don't think she's ordinary in any way. I think she's extraordinary in her intellect and her will and her drive and a true hero.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome.
And we do want to thank today's guest, Carlotta Walls Lanier of the Little Rock Nine. The title of her book is A Mighty Long Way, My Journey to Justice at Little Rock Central High School. Also our guests, Eric Giordano, political scientist and director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and Keith Ulig, education reporter for Gannett Daily Herald Media of Wausau. Special thanks to Colin Hansen of Edgar Schools, whose Walk in Their Shoes lecture series made this program possible. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the Morehouse College Choir, Sam Cooke, the Neville Brothers, Bruce Springsteen, and in the version you heard of Blowin' in the Wind, Peter Yarrow on vocals and guitar, former Congressman Dave Obey on harmonica, yours truly on guitar, recorded live on Route 51 in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. Next week on Route 51, it's more live music as we welcome back to our program jazz violinist extraordinaire Randy Sabine. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you want to hear this show again, you can hear it at 7 o'clock Friday night on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town. Oh.